You gotta put it up to the mic and then hit play.
I do, and I need to start it from zero. Okay, there we go.
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life.
So
Edison
simple.
Style.
Edison style?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I was thinking either Edison or like the dog that's like listening with its ear cocked towards the record player or something.
The RCA dog?
Something like, yeah. His master's
it's
voice.
It's got a name. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Victrola?
Yes.
Anyways.
Victrola the dog.
My name is Brock Dittus. Did I
yes,
say that?
No, but.
Okay. That's
now
me.
You did. just in case you weren't clear, you just said your name.
That's right.
Just now. And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
In an airstream.
In it.
Called Stream
nestled
PDX.
Nestled in the heart of an airstream.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
It is. I feel
pretty
very
cool.
Comfortable. And we are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective while enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains, transit, and simpler living. And soon that will be changing and we will unveil that next week.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it and see if you like it.
I don't have the actual copy yet. And today we will talk about walking's sexy problem.
That's right. We're here with Alexis Gabriel. Hello.
Hey, nice to see all y'all.
Thank
well,
you.
Not really see you, just imagine you're there.
No, yeah. She can see you all right now. Be afraid. Be quite afraid. Thank you for joining us.
Alexis sees all. Alexis knows all.
You're one of the people involved with the Why Isn't Anyone Talking About This podcast.
Yeah.
Which is doing good work here, talking about a lot of the livability and equity issues in Portland, Oregon, as well as abroad.
Thank you.
And,
it's good to be here.
Yeah. And you're one of the other people that uses this new Stream PDX studio that we've been dreaming about for a while.
Yeah, it's cool to actually be here and check it out. It's an awesome vehicle.
Yeah, it's so homey. We should probably picture a few more, or put a few more pictures up on the internet.
Oh, definitely.
So that people can see what we're working with, because it's kind of exciting. It's I feel like I'm far too classy, or I'm not classy enough, and this Airstream is classier than I am.
Yes,
along those lines.
It's pretty classy.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, thank you for joining us, and we're going to talk about walking.
Yes,
in,
we will.
Not too long. So, Aaron,
yes,
what's
sir.
New with you?
I got a crowler.
What's a crowler?
It's a can growler.
Yeah?
Isn't
so
that amazing?
You're saying that you could put something, you could put anything into a can.
Someone's got a machine that you can, apparently, this particular thing, you can, I got Heroes Blend by
Lionheart.
Yes.
Kombucha.
Portland's premier kombucha.
And, the people at Mini, have a machine that puts it all in a can as opposed to like carrying around a big glass bottle.
Right, jar. Right. And well, I think the biggest problem with any sort of growler beverage is that if you want to go and get some, usually you forgot your growler at home.
Yeah.
And so you buy a new one. And then suddenly you have like 12 big glass growlers that you never use because every time you think about getting something, that's how it works for me anyways.
Right. I wonder like how many like growler fillers also kind of double as like glass shops, you know?
Like, and let us sell you this thing that we made.
Yeah.
Glass of the legal or otherwise variety.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Or maybe they take old growlers that people like, I don't know, they're like, here, we'll buy your growler and turn it into something else.
There you go.
Yeah. But Mini is this brand new little mini mart. It's it is a mini mart that doesn't have a sexy problem, I guess, because it's super hip.
No, they got a can machine.
But they got a can machine, yeah. They've got beer on tap. They've got kombucha on tap.
They've got, just laughing at how hard I'm struggling to open this
you
can.
Are, yeah. You got that?
Yeah, I've got my hand over it in case
okay.
It sprays.
Just, oh, there we
there
go.
There we go.
Fabulous.
That's so, pretty smooth.
Yeah.
Full of Lionheart. And this is the Heroes Blend. Which, have you had that before?
I can't say that I have. Like
this. Well, prepare to be amazed.
Oh, it looks cool.
Yeah.
It's like kind of pinkish.
Yeah.
So Mini is a project with my friend Matt Brown and some other entrepreneurial folks he knows. But they were like, hey, why isn't there a Mini Mart that actually has like no junk?
It just smells like bread.
Yeah. You want beer? You want kombucha? We got that. You want coffee? You want pastries? You want Wi-Fi? I think they have Wi-Fi. I can't say that about many other mini-marts.
Can I say that? Can I describe a kombucha as dry?
Yes.
This is a very dry kombucha.
There we go. And like, yet still wet.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like gin.
So, anyways, I stopped by there because I was like, oh, I need a few more things for today. And turns out...
Wow.
Yeah. So, cool.
Let me pour you a glass.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Hank.
Oh, I don't have that much headphone cable. There we go.
True bartender style here. Let me just clean that for you.
It's the only one we have, I guess. yeah, Matt put this idea together. Like, hey, let's have a fancy mini mart. That's not super fancy. Turns out, like the prices are about the same as they would be for any other of the mini mart options, except it's locally owned and they don't sell anything dumb.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a cool idea.
It's a cool idea.
Yeah. So I stopped by there.
And Alexis, you made a connection to the mini marts in Japan.
Oh right.
Oh yeah, it's really similar to the mini marts that I saw in Japan, where I did focus on selling like really healthy food that's kind of affordable but also easily accessible. So I thought that was pretty cool. I don't think they had kombucha on tap though.
Okay.
That might be new. That might be a Portland thing.
That might be. I was gonna say.
I think maybe it is. Yeah. It is interesting because, like, you walk into, usually you expect to see stands of foil packages, and there are fewer foil packages at many than other places. So,
Well, what's the foil industry gonna do now?
I know, right? Well, they got to go over to aluminum.
Yes,
for these crowler can things. Yeah. Yeah, it was wet this weekend.
Yeah, it was.
I stayed inside nearly all weekend.
But you know what else happened this weekend?
What's that?
The Handmade Bikes and Beer Show.
That's right. That's right. You and I were there. It was fun.
It was pretty cool. Don't let the name fool you, though. The bikes, I'm sure they were handmade.
Yes.
But by the name, I was really expecting things that were like put together out of someone's garage.
You were thinking about like freak bikes and tall bikes and that sort of thing?
Yeah. Some wrought iron. I don't know. And these were really cool bikes. Don't get me wrong. Like,
they were.
A lot of them like were just amazing setups. And,
oh, yeah.
And like really elegant lug welds and things like that. But they were so nice.
Well, yeah.
They were really well put together. They were so highly polished. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It just wasn't really what I was expecting at all.
Mr. Ahern of Ahern Cycles, he built Lily's bike, Lily of Stream PDX and of other things. Beautiful bicycle, but he had this one that was on display, and it was super cool. It had like this really innovative gearbox setup, which I haven't really seen on any other bike.
Where,
it's like you don't turn cranks and turn gears. There's this whole transmission system built into a box.
You still have your crank, that you're pedaling.
Right.
But... yeah, so, you know, you have the old school with the chain and the gears and the cassette, and then there's the internal hub gear set, and that's kind of a mystery to me, but still kind of understandable that, like, all the gears are inside the hub of your wheel.
Right.
And then there's this special magical box that is somehow underneath the bottom bracket of your bike.
Right down by the pedals.
Yeah.
Huh.
And all the
you're
magic.
You're still pedaling, and there's still a chain, or
this one had a belt,
or a belt.
There's a belt drive
turning your back wheel.
Yeah,
but all the gears and everything are somehow hidden inside this magic box.
Yeah, it's scary. So I said, "How much does this bike cost?" Because I like the way it was set up, and he's like, "Oh, about $10,000-$12,000." And at that point, I realized I was just looking for fun.
Yeah.
I will never own this bicycle. And
definitely the main detractor of any of that type of, I don't even know what kind of drive they call that. I'm just going to call it magic drive.
Magic drive.
Yes. Anyone who wants to have like the magic fairy drive box in their bike, you have to have a custom made frame for that, because it's almost like a second bottom bracket under there.
It's a really big box. It's like the size. It's about the size of a what?
Yeah, and it's housed like half within, a bread box. Within the frame. It's not just like strapped to the bike.
Right, right. So it was a cool show. I feel like it was more of a bike show than a beer show. Although the beers were handmade, and there was a lot of them. But there were no like beer booths.
There was a lot of banners and stuff for like different welders and like everybody had their like displays. But it did seem like the brewers kind of, and I know like you kind of have to be behind a table or a bar of
behind
some kind.
Behind a curtain.
But it was pulling just levers. Like, yeah, it was just like. Like, okay, yeah, we've got our coolers of our mini kegs of our made beers.
Well, behind the curtain of the beer industry.
I didn't even know, like, who was making what at first, because it's all just sort of like these printed out pieces of paper.
Yeah, ooh. You have to read the signs.
I'm not good at
it. It's not much fun. No, but all the brewers were at the North America, what is it, the Great American Brewers Festival in Denver? Our friend Ross with Basecamp, his beer, his company was represented at the show.
Yeah.
But
they had the best beer there.
They did.
Of all the beers I tasted.
You didn't taste any beers.
Yes, but I'm sure his was the best.
Oh, of course it was. No, but he and a bunch of other people in the industry were all at this event in Denver. So like they were nowhere near this event that you and I were at. But it was nice. It was fun. There was this event, there's a contest. So the sanitation company of choice for this event was Honey Bucket, which services locations, you know, in the Northwest and California, Nevada, Idaho, kind of the Western states. And there was this contest, which I think is over. It was the Honey Bucket selfie contest.
That one was a fun one. Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. Yes, I do.
What did you think of that?
I didn't think that there would be a lot of people who would participate, and there was a lot of people on Twitter.
Because everyone's like, I want to be a part of this. Yeah, everyone was posing. The rules were very clear that you have to be in. There has to be a honey bucket in the background.
Yes.
Not like you shouldn't be inside the honey bucket when you
Some
do the selfie.
Some people broke that rule.
Yeah, they,
oh, no. Oh, no.
That sounds dangerous. But we were talking about this at the table, and then people right behind us at the other table were also talking about this, and I turned to them and I said, you guys talking about this too? This is weird, isn't it? What could
let's
possibly
all
let's all go and do it.
Yeah.
And so we ended up taking a picture of ourselves in front of a bank of honey buckets with strangers.
I hit my face.
Yeah, you did.
I
but that's nothing new.
That's true, but I hit my face with like the first thing I grabbed from the table, which was like an advertisement for like whatever restaurant was catering the
that's
place.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know if that's the kind of promotion they were looking for.
Honey Bucket, Hawaiian barbecue.
Yeah. So it was a fun day. It was, I mean, you know, you start drinking at like 3 and we were there until 7 or something.
Yeah.
It was a good long time and saw people we knew. I saw, in matter of fact, Drew the Welder was there.
And
I wanted to say hi to Drew the Welder, and I was like, wait, we're super hungry. Let's get our food first, and we'll go find him after that. And of course, I always see him like at the beginning of stuff, and he's always there, and then he's gone. So, hi, Drew. Sorry I didn't say hi. I wish I had. But
yeah. I didn't see you at all.
But he's into that. He was actually at the welder supply booth.
Oh, I could totally see that.
Yeah, no, because that's
what
people
do. Checking
out
all the steel tubes and whatnot.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, he does good work, and so I'm glad that he got a chance to see that. But I wish I had been able to talk to him in person. So anyways, that was how we spent the weekend. But yeah. Well, Alexis, how did you spend your weekend?
I had some friends come in from L.A., so spent a lot of time kind of showing them around Portland. And then we met one of our friends in Lake Oswego, and she's like a great cook. So we spent a couple hours there just eating, dining, talking, catching up.
Nice.
Fun.
What kind of food was made?
It was like Southern style food.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it was like pulled pork, potato salad. Kind of the different one was like a Japanese style cucumber.
Really?
Yeah. And then she made this great like 1950s style tiered cake. So it's like chocolate cake cubes, then pudding, then cherries, and then whipped cream on top.
That sounds well. I love anytime there's pudding and cake. That's my favorite combination.
It's pretty delicious.
That was like
really
my
good.
Favorite thing growing up was, I don't know if you've ever had this, it might be like kind of a Midwestern thing, was like, it was a cupcake that had pudding inside the cupcake.
Ooh.
Yeah.
A creamy
center.
Huh.
It was amazing. My aunt would make that every now and then.
Did it have a name?
Like,
did you call it something?
We did. I just, it doesn't come to mind now.
Like putting in a hole, or I don't know. Or,
no, it was way less creative than that.
Okay.
It was like, you know, like putting pockets or something.
Huh. Yeah. That's cool.
I want to look that up now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the problem with cake is that cake is always so dry, and you always want to have like something. You want like frosting or you want something on the cake.
Yeah.
But like pudding inside or like a layer of pudding on the cake.
Automatically.
What's that dessert where they, is it the Lorna Doone cookies and there's pudding underneath that and then there's bananas or something?
That sounds familiar.
What do you call that?
Sand.
Yeah?
Well, so the version I grew up with was called Dirt.
Right.
And it was Oreos.
With Oreos.
And chocolate pudding.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, yeah, but with the Lorna Doone, it's sand.
Yeah, but these are whole crackers, right? Or whole cookies.
Oh, okay. I was like thinking a banana like they were mashed thing. Up.
But I like the idea of sand. I should try that sometime. Yeah.
I have never tried either of those dishes.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
It was like you had the Oreo version and the Nilla wafers version.
Yeah.
Huh.
Dirt was fun because you could put gummy worms in it because it's like it's already dirt. So there's earthworms and dirt, right?
Yep.
So here's some gummy worms. But really, both of those are just a pudding delivery system. It's like, do you like pudding? Would you like some? Here's an excuse.
Here's some texture with your pudding.
Right, exactly. And that's the one downside of pudding is that there's no texture.
Right.
Unless you like smooth, creamy. So, yeah. Anyways, that sounds lovely.
It was great.
That's great. Were we talking about your weekend?
Pudding was a big part of it. That's awesome.
That's great. That's great. How much time would you say you spent preparing the food compared to eating the food?
Zero minutes preparing it because my friend's a rock star.
Okay.
And like, shout out to Laura. Like, because like she's No, we totally, she loves cooking, and she just invited us all over, and we just kind of chatted and hung out, because we all went to school together in California, and a lot of us have since moved up here, and the rest are in Southern California.
Okay, yeah. Nice. It's fun when you get together with people you haven't seen for a while, too.
Yeah.
And it's kind of exciting, either if you're the person going to a new city or a city you don't go to often, or if you're the person, like, hosting, because you can say, hey, these are the cool spots.
Yeah,
I know you, and I know what you like, and you're going to like this.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It is really a lot of fun.
Yeah. So you, before we get into, I was going to ask you about walking. I'm assuming you walked with your friends at least part of the time.
We did. We actually built a walk into the trip. Like,
nice.
One of the friends, you know, they're both from L.A., but they're from somewhere else before that.
And no one walks in L.A.
It's hard to walk in L.A., yeah. So they said, we're coming up to Portland. We want to walk. We want to get outdoors and see somewhere pretty. And last time we went up by Mount Tabor. So this time we kind of went to Lake Oswego and walked around the water. And it was a really nice walk. And thankfully, the weather participated. Didn't give us the full experience. You know, it had rained earlier, but kind of calmed down enough for us to walk and have a really pretty view.
Yeah, because the full experience was Sunday. That was when it all came down. But Saturday was okay. That's great.
Welcome to Portland. Let's take a walk.
That's right.
I told them to bring umbrellas, like, prepared.
Yeah. It's funny because there's not a lot of people using umbrellas
no.
in the Northwest that I notice.
It's like how you out yourself.
But
like,
it's definitely a thing that you need if you don't walk in the rain a lot.
Yeah, where did we get that?
I just don't like being wet.
How is it that Portlanders don't use umbrellas?
Well, I think the Portland metro area is the home of...
Yes.
Well, is what?
This is something I've pondered.
Like, why is there, like, this sort of stigma against umbrellas?
They, like, point to you, like, oh, you're not from here.
Yeah.
You know, with your weird stick. It's a stick with a roof. No, but there's... Columbia Sportswear is headquartered in Beaverton, just over the hill from Portland.
Yeah.
And I mean,
Showers Pass is here.
Right, there are other outdoor clothing companies.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm thinking they actively bought out the umbrella lobby. Like they found some way to take them down. They're like, you know what? You don't want to be here. It's a nice umbrella business, but it'd be
Vancouver.
A shame if something happened to it. So yeah, I think the sportswear industry may have horned in on the umbrella because everybody wears raincoats.
That's
like
true.
Just about anybody who spends some time outdoors. Will wear a raincoat with like a nice hood on it to keep you safe or dry or whatever. But no Northwesterner comes out with an umbrella with a rain tent. I was going to call it, but
a rain tent.
Yeah, a rain tent on a stick. It's
just back to the Midwest with that rain tent.
When my dad was in college, he would pop open an umbrella pretty often. He was from the east side of Washington, so he lived like in the high desert or whatever.
Sure.
But he would use an umbrella, and my mom would make fun of him for reasons that are still unknown, because it was effective. But I guess she wore a rain jacket. She was a sportswear person.
And here's the thing: is like I have a pretty good rain jacket.
Yeah.
But there's only so much that rain jacket's gonna do, like in a really long downpour. Like it's gonna seep in one way or another.
Yes. Yeah, at some point,
like even
the moisture
finds
your skin.
Even if I like just had a garbage bag, like with a rubber band, so like it won't get. It's gonna get in eventually. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not airtight, and you don't want a rubber band that's airtight. Yeah.
Problematic.
Well, speaking of which, are you having problems staying dry? Occasionally,
sure.
You know a good place to get out of the rain?
I know a couple, but there's one in particular.
It's a place, as a matter of fact.
On Southeast 12th and
Would
Division.
You rather be wet on the inside than on the outside? Would you rather pour something down your throat that makes you feel good when it's wet and soggy outside?
Possibly even warm.
Yes. Mm. Yes, depending on the style.
Yes.
At the Beer Mongers at Southeast Division and 12th. So thank you, Beer Mongers, for sponsoring the show. It's very nice of you. It was fun to be at their cyclocross team launch party on Thursday.
I got to say, I was really uncomfortable at first, but like once we got the ball rolling, it was so much fun.
Yeah. We went out and we talked to the cyclocross team and a lady who was having her 40th birthday party. Yes, who dropped in randomly. And anybody else who wanted to chat. Terry, who is kind of the captain of the cyclocross team, he was on the mic for... He must have been on for at least an hour, if not more. So we cut down some of the audio. We spent like 4 hours in the booth back there just talking to people. And we ended up with 2 hours that were listenable. So, and I guess listenable.
That's a good ratio.
The listeners will have to be the judge of that. I know it was a loud room, but I think if you like what we were talking about, it was a fun chat. So, so that's the 2-hour bull ride that people can download that we just posted over the weekend. But yeah, it was a good time. So the Beer Mongers, Southeast Division and 12th. Fun for your mouth, fun for your legs.
Was that? For your legs?
I don't know. I was thinking of cyclocross team.
Oh, okay.
We need to work on that some more.
Maybe.
Okay. Dry on the outside. I don't know. I got nothing. So anyways.
When you need to get dry on the outside, but wet on the inside?
I guess. I don't know. So, Alexis, I was asking you about walking.
She's
because
so ashamed of us.
She's like, keep working on that slogan.
Tell me.
The Sprocket Podcast is available for all your advertising needs.
We'll come up with slogans. You have no idea. But tell us about walking. You think walking is a good idea, but walking has a perception problem?
I think it does have a perception problem. I mean, I think like when you come to Portland, biking's everywhere. Like people are excited about biking. There's like biking clubs. There's biking festivals. There's biking film festivals. There are naked people riding bikes.
That's
right. You know?
You try to do any of those things walking, you get looked at weird.
In California, though, we have a word for people who are streakers, 505. But... So uncommon.
Is that like an area code? Like, they must be from 505.
505, yeah.
I was thinking the Interstate 505. No.
Clearly, we don't have enough streakers here. But like,
no, seriously. If only it was warmer.
If only it was warmer. But
so walking's perception problem.
I think
not enough like goofy walking.
We don't have a lot of excitement around walking.
Yes.
I mean, we have cool things like Walktober, where there's a lot of events set up around focused on walking.
Yeah. By the way, like, it's Walktober.
It's Walktober, guys.
Happy Walktober.
Walktober. Exactly.
I'm gonna drink some more kombucha.
That's cool. And then there's like a lot of different. Like there's a 10-toe walks and different other walking programs, but I feel like they don't have the same fanfare that some of our other like biking focused events do.
Okay.
So I'm like, how can we get walking on people's radar the same way that biking is? Like where people get excited about coming to Portland to walk or staying in Portland and walking, or hey, instead of like biking there, well, Biking is great, though. But instead of, if we can walk there and it's like under a mile, why don't we just walk?
Yeah.
Like,
I think, didn't Portland release a book of walks called Walk There?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. Have you guys looked at it?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's been a couple of years, but I got it from a friend, I think. And
yeah.
It's super cool because there's a bunch of cool things to see.
So many different walks.
Yeah. There was, last time I was at Powell's on Hawthorne, I was looking at the book selection, and there was, I want to say it was a book from Microcosm Press that had walks based on the Beverly Cleary Ramona series.
Yes.
Yeah, which if you were a fan of the Beverly Cleary books, then you could just go on walks that took you by all the locations.
Hmm.
But yeah, there are many good things to see. That, what is it, the 4T trail?
Yeah, the 4T trail.
Where you can
trail.
Take like all these different kinds of transportation, including one of those is your feet. So,
yeah. And there's lots of hikes. I feel like people get excited about hiking
right.
and going somewhere to walk, but not
walking.
Necessarily walking to go somewhere.
In the place where you are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's a little bit different.
People who aren't fans of hiking would just say the hiking is just walking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which it is. but you, first of all, you have to like walking. And
you have to like walking.
And walking probably is informed by your experiences, right? Like if you spend a long time walking to see nothing,
exactly.
then you don't like walking.
Exactly.
Whereas if you had a good experience doing something on your feet, then you might have a different idea of whether it's fun or not.
And I think walking is kind of a way for you to connect with your community and with your neighbors and people throughout Portland because it's a lot more social. You can stop and chat. Like when my friends came to visit, we stopped by Alberta, my roommate. She's actually from Portland. And I've lived here for a couple of years now. So we ended up running into a whole bunch of people.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really fun. We like step into a cafe, chat with people, like walk down the street. Oh, see another friend. Then like on our way back, we saw them again, and it was just kind of a really nice experience to feel like you're part of a community, and you can do that when you walk around.
Right, right. Because, I mean, people say that's one of the benefits of bicycling, but honestly, most of us who are into bicycling are going to be bicycling faster than you can actually. Like when I see somebody I know on the street.
It's definitely more difficult to like just stop or even turn around.
Yeah,
especially to turn around.
Hello.
To turn around, yeah.
And then I'll feel guilty about not stopping and talking to them. So
yeah.
The
yeah.
speed by and wave, like
right. Oh hi, I haven't seen you for a while. Won't see you for a while again.
Well, and I think some of that's also built into our culture, like
yeah.
And I think that's part of walking's perception problem as well, is that we spend a lot of time, or not a lot of time, but we spend a amount of our thought processing time in how do I get from point A to point B more efficiently, more quickly. So that I can enjoy the point B longer or more. And I think, again, like part of the perception of walking, or one of the things it suffers from, is it's quote unquote slow.
And, right.
I think so.
And because it's slow, it's going to be kind of like last on people's list when they want to get to, you know, a place quickly so that they can meet up with their friends and spend more time with their friends, or get to work quicker so that you don't have to spend as much time, you know, in the traffic.
Yeah. Hey, Alexis, what do you think about that?
I think that's completely true. I mean, I think even when people sometimes, I think if people are like, hey, I'm going to get to work, what is the most effective route? They go on the bus or they get on their bikes or something like that. And I also think that a lot of the way we engage with the outside world is sometimes through blocking it out. You know what I mean? Like when we're on a commute, we're like trying to listen to music, or we're trying to get in a zone and get prepared for the day in a way that isn't necessarily social. So it's kind of changing that mind frame that our journey, that socialization is part of the journey of getting to where we're going.
Right.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah,
I think that's the key of the perception problem.
Because I've talked about that with other folks before, where we've asked the question of like, you know, should I not be wearing headphones? Where I only wear one earbud when I bike,
yeah.
But you know, so send your hate mail. But but no, just like the whole thing of like my commuting time is often like inwardly focused, or it's like my alone time.
Yeah.
But I am interested in the idea that, yeah, if you open yourself up to the social opportunities, you can actually have really cool things that happen to you on a daily basis.
And I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with like saying like, you know, my commute is my alone time. I think there is sort of the pitfall, though, of getting into that rhythm of, okay, my commute is my alone time. Now all my time on my bike is my alone time.
Right.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. Or even just saying like, oh, anytime I get from point A to point B, I'm using my bike. So now every time I get from point A to point B, I have to be on my bike.
Yeah.
Even though like there are times where I get to a place and I've realized I've spent more time gearing up, unlocking, locking my bike, you know, taking off all my whatever.
Yeah. Umbrellas are the solution.
I'm not opposed to umbrellas. I just don't use it because I'm afraid of like all the hate that I get.
Right.
I have a threshold at this point. If it's like sprinkle light rain, I will do the whole like Portland thing. If it's heavy rain, I'm like, I can't get soaked for anybody. Like, I'm going to pull out the umbrella. Like,
this is my alone time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you skew towards more social or less social when you're traveling from one place to another?
I'm kind of a combination. I think it's because I've lived in a lot of different parts of the country. I've lived in the South, like in Louisiana and North Carolina. I've lived in the East Coast, in New York and D.C. And I grew up mostly in the Bay and then lived in Southern California before moving to Portland. So a lot of my growing up, like in Oakland, it was people talking to each other when you talk, you know, when you stepped outside your door. You always said hi to your neighbors.
Right.
That was part of what you did. So when I moved to places and people didn't do that, I was like, people aren't friendly here. Like, why don't people?
What's wrong with these people?
Like, so I think that it's not only linked to, I guess, just a feeling of, you know, well-being and feeling comfortable in community. It's like linked to all these other things, like community resiliency. If there's natural disaster, they say the best thing you can do is to know your neighbors.
Yes.
And the first way you know your neighbors is just say hello. You know, just be friendly and make that first step. And that's one of the fun things I had noticed when I came to Portland. Like, I get on the train and strangers would start talking to me. And I'm like,
and it's not necessarily weird.
It's not. It's nice after. Like, at first I was like, who are all these strangers? But like after that, I was like, this is cool. I'm having really interesting conversations.
Yeah.
I see someone do something interesting and I just jump in. Why not?
Yeah.
And it does a great job in helping me feel like this is a place that I can call home.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it is interesting because I feel like in other places, especially like I spent some time in Boston since my wife's parents and family live there. And in Boston, like, you don't talk to people on the train. It's just not a thing that happens.
No.
Yeah.
Unless you know them, right? But even then, like, when I see other people that know each other, like, they've already done their talking. They get on the subway. It's quiet time.
Yep.
And so, yeah. So it's funny.
I still default to that a lot when I'm, especially on the MAX.
Yeah.
On the bus, I feel more comfortable, interestingly.
That's interesting.
Enough. I've struck up more conversations with strangers on the bus than on the MAX.
Huh.
Unless Does light rail have from, a social problem?
Maybe. Unless I'm coming from the airport, that's a different thing.
I feel like there's times. Like, in the morning on the MAX, I feel like it's quiet time. People are like, I unfortunately break all those rules because I usually call my family then. That chatty person on the phone.
You're that lady.
I'm that person. And so I'm like, shut up. And I'm like, you know, I am talking with my family on the East Coast. 3-hour difference, guys.
Yeah.
Like,
I can't help
right,
it.
You get
can't
a pass. Help it. Like, you get a pass.
But like in the night, I feel like after, I don't know, 12 o'clock, people get chatty on the MAX.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. Huh.
That most of them have been drinking at that point, right? Super late night. Late night MAX. Wait, after 12 noon or 12 midnight?
12 noon, but oh, I mean, okay. Some people start drinking then. I don't know.
Okay. Well, in that case, a few people have started by then.
But what about you?
Well, let's see. I mean, I haven't taken transit for a couple of years regularly because I used to. I used to have a pass with work, and so I'd ride all the time. And these days, I think I've gotten a lot more like just biking because it's the free. It's not free, but, you know, it's the option you don't have to pay any more for right up front. So
has lots of benefits for the environment. Yeah. It's healthy.
Yeah. And so, yeah, for me, I'm interested in talking to people. Because some people say, like, oh, you don't make eye contact on, you know, on light rail or on the subway or whatever. And I kind of enjoy just like a little bit of a connection with people. I like being able to kind of reach out. Because if you have eye contact and it goes well, then you might have something interesting to say to each other.
That's true.
If you have eye contact and it doesn't go well, then you already know you're not going to talk to that person.
Quickly move away.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. I'm
one
of those.
I'm going to do that next time I'm like on transit. How's this eye contact going? Is this going well? No, that's not going so well. How about this? Oh, no, that one's not going well either.
But I usually do like a kind of almost like a nod or like, hey, what's up? Sort of like an eyebrow raise or that sort of thing, which I think sometimes is the gateway to hello verbally.
I kind of.
And sometimes is not.
I do the thing that I hate. Actually, and that is I chime in on
how's it going, guys?
No, I chime in on conversations that I hear that like interest me.
Oh, you don't know Motorhead?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, nice. Well, I think that is interesting. Like sometimes when that happens, but sometimes you want people to join your conversations, and sometimes you don't. I feel like if you're talking in public, you're at least disposed to the idea that somebody else, because most people having conversations in public, especially on light rail, it seems like they're kind of like performing in a way.
Huh.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
I'm not usually, but like, but I do think that you're in a public space, you know, when you're speaking on a train or on a plane or like when you're just walking by. I mean, I've had a conversation I was talking about dating with one of my good friends, and a guy just walked by and chimed in. And it was like, there's some advice for you, and kept walking.
Now, what you need to do is use this cologne.
I could just imagine him walking away like, yeah, I did. I did good.
That.
I did good.
But no, I think
she's
going to
be all right.
She's going to take care of it.
I really enjoy kind of peppering things in because I feel like most people don't want an extended conversation with a stranger.
Yep.
But it can be entertaining to drop something on someone else's conversation. Be like, what are you going to do with this?
Well, and that's why coming from the airport's always the exception for me.
Yeah.
Because there's more likely somebody who like hasn't been to Portland or is visiting Portland for like, you know, the whatever time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of feel like I can be a Portland ambassador for them. And
like you
and
do like something weird and then they saw the Unipiper.
No.
Okay.
No, like, oh, you like bentos. Let me tell you about like the bento box.
You don't know from bento.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Or things like that.
It is nice to offer like direction if someone seems, not even if someone seems lost, but just like they're looking around in wide-eyed wonder.
Yeah. Mm.
And suddenly suddenly they're open to that conversation about bento or whatever.
I also think that this city gets a lot of international travelers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of the fun thing about like just walking around downtown or somewhere. You get to hear people like speaking Japanese or with Scottish accents, and you get a chance to kind of, like you said, be an ambassador.
Yeah.
For the city.
Not so much on the east side.
It's interesting that way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like downtown is kind of the mecca for everyone because it has Voodoo Donut and it has all the other stuff, like all the stereotypical stuff that everyone's like, oh, you gotta go to Portland and do this thing and do that thing and go wow,
go to Powell's, so, go to Voodoo, go, I can't even think of like other things, I guess Pioneer Square,
but like the tourism aspect,
I don't get
of Portland
downtown enough.
Yeah,
I just realized, like, I don't even know the last time I went downtown.
Did I say it on this show? Did I say it somewhere recently that I feel like downtown is like gone?
Oh yeah,
in a way. And the thing is, it's not.
It's not.
I just don't understand it. It's become a thing that I don't relate to at all.
I also have this underlying fear of crossing bridges.
Okay.
Not that the earthquake might happen while I'm on the bridge, but that the earthquake might happen while I'm on the wrong side of the bridge.
And then you'll have to take a boat.
and you're afraid
of water.
Yeah. Well, I'm not so afraid of water.
No, but you're afraid of boats.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Hashtag boat fear month.
So now I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
So what do you think Portland could do to make walking more accessible, more sexy, more interesting for people?
I don't think the answer is naked walks.
Right.
I don't think so either.
Right. Nor is it group walks. You know, because like the answer for bicycling was always like, oh, we're going to get a bunch of people to all ride bikes together.
Yeah.
But I don't think people necessarily
like
want to walk.
Bikes.
Right.
Critical mass.
Critical
walk.
Feet. Yeah.
Critical
I don't know.
Feet. I like that.
We're all in the lane. Check
I get that
out.
Sometimes. Gotta wear the wool socks, man.
Seriously.
Wool socks.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me like Portland has been angling at this walking accessibility thing for a while, because the whole 20-minute neighborhood concept, the idea that you could leave your door and be back in 20 minutes after having done everything you wanted to do, whether that's go to the coffee shop or go to the grocery store or the library or whatever. Well, and the library is certainly not going for 20-minute neighborhood because there's not enough of them and they can't afford to open more. But aside from that, but someday.
Someday
when all the books are scanned in and everybody has an iPad, someday there will be a library on every corner. I think Portland's been doing a good job of like promoting the idea.
I think so too.
The trick is, like development wise, I think a lot of it with like affordable housing, 20-minute neighborhoods are a good thing for people who can afford to live in a 20-minute neighborhood. But there's still a lot of places in this town and a lot of places like nationwide and probably worldwide in some senses that like development has kind of made people not want to walk, because walking would take 3 hours to do the same things.
I walked when I lived out in outer southeast Portland. I went through this phase where I was like walking to work. It would take me an hour and 30 minutes.
Wow. How far did you walk?
About 5.5 miles.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was like nice. I like chat with my family or like listen to a podcast. But I was also waking up at the break of dawn. Like, it was like 5-something or 6-something.
There's a bit of give and take.
Of give and take.
So I was doing that when I first moved to Portland, too. I had like a 3-mile commute, and I would walk. And
that's
luckily, it was just along the 205 trail. So.
Oh, that's right. Nice,
was it episode 101, 102 that you told some walking stories?
It was one of my first ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And he also sold shoes.
That's cool.
I sold shoes.
Yeah.
As my job.
I sold shoes. I thought you meant like on that episode. I sold shoes. It's like, that was a long time ago.
You were really
I'm
selling it,
sure
man.
I would remember.
But Aaron did a lot of walking.
Yeah.
So I asked him this, I think, when we talked about that. But do you have recommendations for anyone who wants to walk more? What should people think about?
I think kind of normalizing it, like having walking meetings instead of just sit down meetings.
That's a great idea.
It's fun. It's healthy. Everyone's mind is working. Conversation is engaging.
You're way less likely to like get caught up in this sort of argument loop because you're using your physical body as well as your mental strength your mental body.
Yeah.
I guess, you know.
Yeah.
But having the two engaged together, you're less likely to get caught up in this like I need to get my point made.
Exactly.
How many walking meetings have you done?
I've done a couple, actually.
Nice.
That's cool.
Have they gone well?
They've gone well.
You find that it does what you want it to do.
It's fun, and it's a nice way to engage with the city, to learn about the other people in the meeting. It's also nice to step away from your desk or whatever for a little bit.
Right.
Stretch your feet out, get some fresh air, whether it's raining or not, and then still get your work done.
Yeah. You have an office job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice not to have to sit down all day if you've already been sitting all day.
Wonderful.
It's like what you would do on your break.
It's what I would do on my break, but I am, you know, walking, talking, and still getting work done.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
And I don't know. There's a couple other things I think people could do, too. I mean, if you know that someone that you're going to visit or that you have time and wherever you're going is within 3 miles or 1 mile, just walk there.
Mm-hmm.
Just easy stuff, you know, just build it into your everyday life
and find things that you can walk to.
Yeah.
You know, going to Fred Meyer is great for my groceries, but maybe like there are other places where I can get similar groceries that are closer by.
Yeah.
I'm lucky enough to kind of live with somewhat within walking distance to a few of those.
Yeah, me too. I end up walking to them and the groceries are really heavy, I take the bus back, but like walking there at least. And then while you're in the store, you're walking a lot as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, you're walking through your neighborhood or whatever. You get to know your neighbors and your neighborhood a little bit more.
I like that idea.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention, I haven't spent a whole lot of like intentional time there, but I drive through it pretty much every day. And I see it as a place where like walking is done pretty well. It could be improved a little bit more, but I think where it can be improved is mostly how people who drive through it engage, and that's the Cully neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like outer, kind of outer northeast.
Yeah.
Not super outer, but like kind of the outer edge of inside the freeway loop.
But, I mean, there's a lot of apartment complexes there, and they're all within walking distance to this. It's an Albertsons, it's a grocery store. It's a chain. It's not your local whatever, but there's still all these other, like, little satellite places around that neighborhood. And the infrastructure is actually pretty well done for a walking community or neighborhood. I think a lot of the inner neighborhoods would do well to see, you know, how can we, I mean, obviously you can't take what Cully's doing and, like, put it in Hawthorne, for example, or Alberta, but what are they doing and how can we incorporate what's working well with them into our neighborhood?
Wait, so what are they doing well in Cully?
That is a good question. What are they, you know, I don't know what makes it, is it just because it was so forgotten for a long time?
Uh-huh.
That the city was able to build the infrastructure pretty much from scratch.
Oh, have you seen this, Alexis? Have you been up in that area?
Sidewalks are really wide. Cully area. I mean, I've worked with a couple of the groups up there, like Hacienda and Community Cycling Center. Yeah. Does a lot of work up there, and Verde and ABC Group. So with them, like you said, because there's so much new development going in, there's like Quinamex Park, there's like the cycle track up there. There's a lot of places where you can walk and explore and see all this new fun development that's been community led. And it's cool. I mean, that kind of leads me to something that I used to do, and which I still do, when I first came to Portland, was find a way to go to a different neighborhood every week or every other week and just walk around.
That's a great idea.
And just, you get to tour your city, you're doing something healthy, and you're engaging with a different area than you usually do.
Yeah. My old housemate did that with a girlfriend of his at one point.
Yeah.
Where they got a map of Portland, and it was that map that's made up of all the neighborhood shapes or whatever. So it's got the names of all the neighborhoods, and they all make the shape of the city of Portland. But they just took, like, all these neighborhoods and they just ticked them off one by one. They said, all right, we're going to Multnomah Village. We're going to Linton. We're going to Cully. We're going to Piedmont. And they just kind of looked around and
that's cool.
Pick one place to have, like, a day or a night to just, like, explore and see what's there.
Huh.
So I like that idea.
That's really
Have you had any discoveries? Any?
I don't know. I love neighborhood walking, so I like walking. I've walked all over the city at this point. I mean, when I lived in the Mount Tabor area, of course, I've walked all around there.
Extinct volcano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. Like the history aspect of it, too.
Right.
Is it extinct or inactive?
Oh, it's a good question.
Could it
blow again? I don't know.
I just found out Mount Hood is inactive.
Yeah, it could blow again.
And I think Tabor is
extinct.
Rainier.
Yeah, Rainier. They've been talking about that. I grew up underneath Rainier. They've been talking about that forever.
So they think it's still going to happen, or like they just don't know?
I think it's like the likely next one. Next time there's an eruption in the Cascades, like that's the one
next
that's
year.
Most likely to. Yeah. And both of my sisters live in the valley, like in the Lahar Path. So I try not to think about that.
Yeah,
but
I suppose
that's kind of.
Yeah.
But that's like the whole big earthquake thing, you know?
Yeah.
Never know when that's coming. I know. I was around when the 1989 earthquake happened in the San Francisco area. We lived in the Bay then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that was pretty hectic.
I bet.
But hopefully that earthquake isn't happening for a long, long time.
I would certainly hope so, yeah.
And we've made some adjustments to our bridges in the meantime.
No kidding. Well, yeah, and everybody should have their emergency kit with all their water stored up, I suppose. Sure. I'm still not really there yet.
Really?
I have, like, the bare minimum.
I mean, that's all you need, though.
The bare minimum?
Yeah. They said about a week's worth, though.
That's when health comes.
You need the bare minimum and your charisma.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm
cash,
banking on
cash
that one.
And small bills, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to dwell on disaster, but how do you think the whole, like, earthquake preparedness, how does that relate to walking? Because people are probably going to be doing more walking once they can't drive places.
Sure. I mean, I know that looking at the disaster trails, I have a couple friends who are in, the neighborhood net groups.
Uh-huh.
And like the organizing groups were like, this is, we're all going to talk to this person, or we're all going to organize here to figure out where we get our water from, because we don't have any. We didn't put any away.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's another reason to talk to your neighbors.
No kidding.
Share is caring.
Which is a reason to walk.
And you, I didn't know this when I was living in Lentz, but I lived like just two houses down from like our net representative.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ham radio operator guy,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So how'd you find out?
I was at... Was it disaster relief trials, I think?
Oh, yeah.
And he was there, and I was like, hey, what are you doing here? He's like, yeah, I'm a net representative.
I'm the most important person in your neighborhood.
He's like, oh, okay. Well, I will look to see if you are running, then I will know.
Exactly. Watch out for the orange vest.
But I think it's very related. I mean,
yeah,
you're going to have to figure out. It's going to be the easiest way to navigate the terrain if it's just walking mm-hmm. in the case of a natural disaster. Which kind of means that people should also have a map, not a printed map, as well as their phones, because if reception goes down or something like that, you want to have a backup plan.
Right.
Your phone will not save you.
Phone may not save you. So I think walking is definitely important, deeply connected to any kind of natural disaster planning that people will have to do. And I think if you have a mobility issue, having kind of a backup plan for how you're going to get around and talking with your neighbors even then is more important, because you know that you have limited ability to get around the city by that avenue.
Yeah. Yeah. So as far as, I don't know if we're making walking any sexier by talking about disasters or not, but do you have any ideas about how we can lift, like facelift walking for people?
I've been thinking a lot about that, and I don't know if it can go the same avenue that biking has. Like biking, there's like gear and stuff like that. And the kind of
and
gear.
It's cool.
It's cool gear. And sometimes it's not as cool, like the deep V vest, like please.
Yeah. And like, bib shorts. No good. I mean, if you wear bib shorts, fine. It's, I don't care. Go do what you love, but it's not
do
my
what
thing.
You love, yeah. You know?
Seems dangerous.
There isn't padded shorts for walking.
No. Are there padded insoles?
Do you need
no, that's exactly.
Is it too,
you don't need special equipment.
Is it too much information?
But I think that actually kind of makes it interesting. I feel like people get brought in by the lore
by
that
the
you
marketing.
Need all this gear and the marketing and stuff like that. So how do you make something that's
people you
basically
need special
free.
Equipment for walking?
Let me just put it in there. As far as like, I want to just acknowledge the fact that sometimes longer walks can be physically challenging because of
that's true.
Friction that you're not used to. That's happened to me.
Yeah.
So maybe gear is needed.
Well,
maybe that's what you're saying.
Or coconut
not much.
Oil.
Yeah, I was going to say. It's like probably a product you already own.
I'm only like half joking. I swear by coconut oil.
Because some people use like weird like, you know, synthetic goo stuff to like
Shammy
lube
butter,
up for a ride
for a
or
ride.
Whatever, yeah. Like, you know, swimming or I don't know, whatever you do, like athletic things. But yeah, like,
I like whatever you do.
Coconut oil is good. Vaseline is a petroleum product, but I mean, it'll do the trick. That'll reduce some of that friction for you. So if you're taking a longer walk, I find sometimes I need it.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's good.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
It's a pro tip right there. You don't need expensive gear. What about shoes? What do you find? Like, what do you need to walk comfortably?
I mean, just some regular tinnies. Like, yeah. I mean, I had some, taking people back with this one, but some really cool Crocs. And they're amazing for walking and rainproof. So
Are they good for walking?
Yeah.
Because I always liked them.
I love them.
Partially just because, like, they're kind of like trend bucking, like they don't
they are.
You know, they haven't really ever been cool, as it were, and so you know, you can rest easy.
It's true.
They're like the overalls of shoes or something. I don't know. It's like, haven't been cool, never will be, but maybe they're cool because of that.
They're like a trendsetter because they're not setting trends.
Exactly. Yeah, no, but Crocs, they're great. They're also lightweight.
Awesome.
They're
lightweight.
Fairly inexpensive, right? Because they're like foam mold.
They're foam. You're walking on clouds, basically.
Right.
I mean,
right. And I suppose
I've always wrote them off.
Everything has its limits, but
should reconsider.
Yeah, I kind of want to get some now. Honestly,
they're pretty cool. Actually, I enjoy them.
I think
I'm not
a
fan of open toed anything.
I do wear open toed ones. Though. I did.
No,
well, I mean, even though they're closed toed, it's still too open for me.
Okay.
But seriously speaking, I think that is something that I've been doing a lot of thinking about too. And it'll be interesting to hear if there's going to be some feedback from you guys' audience about what are their recommendations for.
That's the call to action
cooler.
Right there.
Yeah.
I got an interesting idea here.
Yeah.
And hearing these conversations is the Walktober Challenge.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
How many neighborhoods can you walk through? Not necessarily walk to, because that would be pretty difficult.
Yeah.
But walk through in the month of October.
That's a cool challenge.
It's a good idea. I was just thinking about when I did Walk to Work Day, because that was, in May?
Yeah,
it was May.
Okay, yeah. It's been like, 3 or 4 years now.
And it took you, three hours?
I walked 13 miles to work that day, because I was like, why not? Let's see what happens.
I like that.
It was exciting. It was a whole adventure. But, I forget.
I'm intrigued how long it took. Now that I've taken that commute myself for a while.
Yeah.
Like, did you go over, the 33rd Avenue overpass there?
No, I went to MLK.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
This is shop talk, inside talk about our commutes.
Okay, I'm
intrigued. How we get to work,
this 13-hour trek to work.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I started at 3 a.m., I think.
Uh-huh.
And I got to work by about 6.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, it was all right.
Huh.
And actually, I guess what would you call that? Like, I recorded myself talking to myself
as I
walked.
You sort of monologued your walk.
Right.
Or narrated your walk.
Yeah. It was fun. It was cool. And it was, getting to see a lot of things that even though I bike through a lot of those places, I had never seen the places up close, like, with that much detail.
Yeah, it's different.
And when you're walking, you spend more time there. So.
Yeah.
I think it's really easy to get impatient.
Yeah, for sure.
That was one of the first changes I noticed when I went from walking everywhere to biking everywhere.
You got way more patient?
No, I got way less patient.
Okay.
And,
There
would be times where, I would still walk, say, from my place to, Cascade Station, our watering hole down there in Lentz. And... I would kind of walk and think to myself and kind of stare down and look up and see a landmark in the distance and look down, look around, walk for some more. And, and I look up and it hasn't moved. And I'm like, come on.
Why aren't I there yet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Alexis, have you experienced that? Do you ever get impatient when you're walking?
I don't, because I kind of feel like it's kind of like sin time for me. I don't know, but I'm also that cyclist who is really calm. People are speeding past me and I'm looking over at the water as I cross the Hawthorne. I'm this is glorious. So I think that's just kind of my commuting style. I want to enjoy my commute. And if I'm not enjoying my commute, I'm like, why am I doing it this way?
Right.
You know, I need to up the ante here. So, I mean, for me. I also work to build value into my walk, I would say. Like I said, my family lives across the country. That's one of the time periods I have to talk with my family. So using it that time, or just listening to podcasts that I'm really interested in and learning or laughing or saying hi to people who walk by. So for me, it was really a really nice way to kind of start the day.
Yeah, seems like you'd have to develop a mindfulness practice of some kind. You have to be ready to take whatever you're getting, I guess.
Yeah.
That's cool, though.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
And that's where I'm not there yet. I don't have the whole, I think I'm occasionally there, but I'm definitely I want to get there now. So, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's also I don't know if most people, but... It's nice to build in some time of the day where you don't have to hurry.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just picking what part of your day do you want to say, hey, this is my time to chill a little bit.
Totally.
And building in the time so that you can actually allow for it.
Right.
Because I started my morning so early, it gave myself a lot of leeway to arrive whenever.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have plenty of time to spare, then you're not worried about getting there on time. Because that's the thing. I'm still always worried about, am I on time? Right. I don't know. I saw Aaron on the way to work this morning, and he was fixing some mechanical issue on the side of the road. And I was like, you okay, man? And I was thinking, he's probably going to be more stressed when he gets to work than usual.
My bike tweeted about this, actually.
Yeah? Your bicycle tweets?
Yes.
Yes, that's cool. Tweets, my Twitter account. And this is something that we've been kind of hammering on occasionally is that your commute is not a race, no matter what mode.
Yeah.
Walking, car, bike, transit, your commute is not a race.
No matter what the other people say.
You should arrive with plenty of time to like chill out from your commute.
Yeah.
And even that, you should leave with plenty of time to have emergencies.
Yeah.
To have time to chill out. Like,
right.
I still made it on time. I was a little stressed because, you know, I had this mechanical issue going on. By the way, my chain got, like, caught up into the crank.
Oh, yeah.
Like, between the crank and the chain ring.
It, like,
that happened to me, too.
And so, like, yeah, and wedging that out, like, it got in there good. And, like, it was really difficult. At one point, I, like, just stopped working on it and walked for a while.
Yeah.
And then I thought, this is dumb. I'm definitely going to be late now. And then worked on it a little bit more.
I do have to fix this.
Yeah. Eventually, like, came out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, leaving 10 minutes earlier than you normally would is, like, kind of my thing. Like, if I could convince most of Portland to just leave 10 minutes earlier, no matter what your mode is, I think your commute is going to be so much easier, so
less stressful.
So much less stressful.
I feel like it sets a tone for the day, for the start of the day. So if you can start with feeling like, oh, what a glorious day, rather than like, I am like hyped up, I'm stressed because I'm like going to be late, I'm slightly sweaty because I was hurrying. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. I stripped down. Like, I stripped all my layers off because, like, I had the nervous sweat. I had the, like, got to hurry my ass up sweat. But in the meantime, when I got there, I actually felt really good because I was like, still on time. Yeah.
Boom.
Did that.
And walking no longer has a sexy problem.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. Do you start your days with coffee, Alexis?
I don't.
Okay. Are you a coffee person or no?
Like, coffee makes me sleepy, or it makes me hyper, so I never know which one. So I'm just like, tea it is. You
okay,
know?
There you go. Yeah. You start with tea.
Yeah, I start with tea.
So that's that sort of thing. It's almost like the whole, like, stop to smell the roses or whatever. Like, whatever your morning thing is, your morning routine, like, make sure you have that. I feel like sometimes a cup of coffee for me, and I haven't actually had a cup of coffee in years, but sometimes it's just... Well, not years, I guess. I mean, I've had coffee.
Come on.
I mean to say is I don't make coffee in the morning before I leave because
Have the morning coffee.
Right, but my equivalent experience is like I have that bottle of Viso every morning.
Okay.
And I have to sit down and open the bottle. I have to sit down and drink it up and, you know, fruit juice and caffeine. I find that is a centering time. Like if I know that I have to drink this bottle of Viso, I'm going to make time for that. And that makes sure that I have time to get away on time so I can be 10 minutes early.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Be prepared for, what is it? Expect the unexpected.
Exactly.
As they said in Spinal Tap, which makes the unexpected the expected, which leaves you vulnerable to the truly unexpected.
Wow, I don't even remember that part of Spinal Tap. That is amazing.
But, yeah. Anyways. But, yeah, I think it's a good idea just to, like, whatever it is that you do, having a routine. You don't have to do the same thing every day, day in and day out. But having a routine and having, like, that cup of tea or that cup of coffee or whatever it is that you do in the morning seems like a good idea.
It's a nice way to start the day off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else you want to say before we kind of wrap up and move to news and mail?
No, not that comes to mind now, but maybe tweeting something or Facebooking or emailing you guys something later.
There we go. We will retweet that when you think about it. You're involved with the Why Isn't Anyone Talking About This podcast?
I am. You guys should check us out.
That's right. It's whyisn'tanyone.com.
Whyisn'tanyone.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter.
There we go.
There are a couple episodes of that have changed my life forever.
Yay.
Well, yeah.
And I don't mean that as a superlative. Like, I mean that in a very factual sense.
And that's because these things ought to be talked about.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a good thing. What was the last episode you were on?
The last episode that I was on is one that we're going to release soon, and it's talking about tokenism.
Tokenism.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That one we worked with Simon Tam.
Yes, Simon Tam. I couldn't think of his name. I was like, the musician guy.
Yeah. Yes.
Is that the one that I walked in on that one day?
I think so. That
okay.
is the one.
I apologize.
Both of us walked in.
I hope you edited me out. But yeah, good work. Are you doing anything else people should know about?
Well, I'm also involved with the OEC, the Emerging Leaders Board, so I'm really into sustainability as well. So if anyone has interest in that realm, please let me know. And then I do a lot of work around placemaking.
There we go. Yeah, and that's a big, you're a big fan of placemaking.
I'm a big fan of placemaking.
Would you say that you want 20-minute neighborhoods everywhere?
I would say a combination.
Yeah.
But I do like the fact that we're building more public spaces around the city.
Human space.
Human space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the city is a lot more diverse than it has reputation for. And then creating those public spaces where people can mingle is just really important for our city moving forward.
Right. And then making the places inviting enough for people to mingle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Very good. Very good.
I thank you guys for having me.
Thank you for coming
this is so
in.
Fun.
Yeah. Do you have time to hang out as we actually don't have that much news or mail, but
yeah.
Well, and we made up the news this week. But
I'm going to see you guys' news. Yeah.
I feel like news might have to come with some apologies, but
right. When we say news, we mean something we're excited about. Don't you love that we can edit things?
I just noticed that there's like an internal metronome like blinking on this.
Yes.
Like we're way off.
I wasn't going to say anything. Hey, what's on the calendar?
Like, okay, so for all of October, we've just been talking about this, and I just added it. It's Walktober.
That's right.
Lots of walking events. And you know what? Go start one of your own, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get a bunch of people.
And
take
off
your clothes.
It doesn't have to be naked.
No, you don't. No, just kidding.
Get on your special gear.
Exactly.
Get your special gear on.
And by that we mean this is all kind of we're playing around. What we mean is go out and walk.
Yes. October 15th, Brown Bear, Brown Bear, their reunion show.
That's right. I have the pleasure of playing with some old musical friends, and it's a little house show, and it's free. So you should come if you're free, and you're in the sound of my voice.
October 21st through 23rd is Freak Bike Fall.
That's right.
There's a lot of cool events with freak bikes. And
handmade bicycles.
You don't have to have a freak bike to join in.
No, but if you want to see a bunch of weird stuff happen. If you want, would you like to see fire and trailers?
Fire probably will happen. Yes.
Yeah.
Huh.
And during that, coincidentally,
October 22nd, the disaster relief trials.
We were talking about the big one.
We haven't registered yet.
No, we got to talk about that.
Yes.
Let's do it off mic.
Well, definitely.
Yeah, but we're thinking about being a team, I guess, yeah? So
yes,
let's
you can
talk
have
about
a team
it off
of
mic.
Three. Yes.
Yeah. So the disaster relief trials, if you would like to either see people with cargo bikes enacting disaster relief, or you would like to be one of those people.
Oh, and it's free to spectate. Like,
yeah.
You know, you don't
just
have
like,
to register to, like, show up.
I was going to say, it's just like Civil War reenactment. It's like, you know, you can just show up and watch it happen.
But who would want to do?
That sword is the wrong make.
Yeah, I'd like to do that at Civil War reenactment.
You're wearing your epaulets on the wrong shoulder. I don't know. So,
all right.
We got some news.
Yes. So, our one headline is...
Us.
We've got patches.
Yes. Hey. got patches.
That was almost in the same tone, wasn't it?
No. We got... So, Marcus Norman designed the cool little podcast logo that we've had as our podcast artwork for however long.
Forever.
It's like 4 years now.
Or
something. And we finally made it into an honest-to-goodness little patch, and an embroidered patch that you can put on whatever you want. If it's on your jacket or on your bag or whatever. So we are mailing those out. And as we speak, well, I guess earlier today, we were addressing envelopes. And
Yeah,
as we speak, they're being ferried to you by the U.S. Postal Service.
Yes, and here comes the apology.
Yeah.
I am sorry if I have inadvertently offended any of you with the silly-ass comments I've made in my letters.
I said some weird things.
Well,
I found those emoji stickers.
Oh, yeah.
There are these stickers you can get at Fred Meyer that are like, not all the emojis, like not the bike one for whatever reason.
Oh.
But you can get the poop emoji.
Oh, I thought it was chocolate yogurt.
No. You can get the chocolate yogurt emoji.
That ain't chocolate yogurt.
And then like for whatever reason, all the angry emojis, which I didn't use any of those because we're sending nice letters to people. So yes, if we inadvertently, But anyways,
I stole that joke. By the way, I should say I stole that one.
Okay, yeah, but that's because it's a good one.
Because yes, exactly.
Yeah, if any of our current donors are donors, which they are, they're going to get a patch in the mail.
Yeah, and even a few past donors.
That's right. So if you used to be a donor, but you're still listening to the show and you're just like, hey, I can't afford it, that's okay. We love you. Thank you for the donations. That's why we're here. Let us know you're still listening and we'll give you a patch. But we're going to need your address.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, if you want a patch and you don't want to be a donor, you can buy one. We'll figure it out. Send us an email. Or you could be a donor for a month or whatever. Hook it up.
In the little notes, I'm just doing it for the patch.
I'm just doing it for the patch. Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to promise anything, but we have thoughts about what might come later on.
You know, I read these credits like every week.
Yes,
and. You know, the list gets a little bit longer and longer.
All the people's names, yeah.
And I never realized how cool, but like how many cool people have
how many names?
Yeah, have been
donated
to us. Oh my
goodness, there's 50
us.
On the list right now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's why they're not all addressed and mailed yet. But
right, well, and so I'm doing this at work, and I've got like a stack, you know, at my little table in the break room, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Look at all these letters. And like everyone's just like they can't fathom what exactly is happening.
You have a fan club.
Right. Yeah. They're like, why are you giving these, why are you writing to these people? And I'm like, well, because they donated to the podcast that I'm a part of.
What's a podcast?
Well, they're like, so you talk into a mic and these people like give you money for this? And I'm like, what kind of?
I guess.
Yeah.
That is what happens. But we really appreciate everybody's support.
Well,
and this is one little token of appreciation. We want to have
great.
A physical thing.
It was
thing.
So cool to like have a physical manifestation of how many. And like, it really drove the point home to me. Like,
right.
I feel really fortunate that people are willing to like.
Totally.
You know, have one less cup of coffee or.
Maybe they still have that cup of coffee.
Well,
they're just paying more.
Yes.
But yes.
You know what I mean.
So, we really appreciate it. And again, it's no, you know, it's no like guilt trip. If you can't afford to do it, don't worry about it. We love you. So anyways, we got patches.
Yep.
Hey, we got patches.
At least it's not a tote bag.
I do like that as the like.
that's our thing. You know, I didn't write that.
You could make
all.
A tote bag if you got enough patches.
I didn't write that at all.
Well,
I
still
wanted
got some
to.
Time.
Oh yeah, there's still more.
Yeah. Well, we started with the oldest, like longest running donors, and worked our way up to the. Yeah. So, anyways, so we don't have a tote bag for the Sprocket Podcast, but you know what we do have. A virus lab.
I was like, that is. That was not the effect I was thinking we were going to get. That's great. So this came to us from Chris Smith. Thank you, Chris Smith.
The Chris Smith.
When you run
God
for mayor,
men.
I'm your man.
Yes.
Let me know.
Indeed.
Bike Ped Drive-Thru Access Initiative. PDX needs to hear your voice.
So I believe it's on the table that in the city of Portland they're going to.
Is it this right here?
Yes, that's how you provide feedback.
How to provide feedback.
That's a link that we'll put
a testimony.
Up.
Oh, and
the city of Portland wants to hear it.
There. Cool.
But the actual information is that Chris clued us into the idea that Portland is thinking about doing a thing where people could ride their bikes through any drive-thru. Like right now, Burgerville is super nice, and
they
support sustainable things. And so they're like, why don't you use bicycles to get your milkshake or your hamburger or your... what is it, rosemary fries? Like all the seasonal. Pumpkin shakes are in, I think,
hazelnut,
again, right now.
Oh.
Yes.
Hazelnut chocolate is the one that, like, people go nuts for.
That's right. Mm, it has its own emoji. So the nice thing is Portland might allow people to go through drive-thrus like anywhere just because it's a thing they can do. But right now it's still in the planning stages. So the city needs to know that you care about this.
Yeah. Didn't Walgreens like come under fire recently?
A couple years ago, right? Yeah. They like turned somebody down. They're like, you can't be here. And I guess technically the company has a policy, but it's not really unsafe. You're a person standing next to a window. We got a lot of that in this town.
Yes.
So, I like the idea that people could actually go through, they could drive through or bike through or walk through or whatever. And corporate policies be damned. So I think my guess is that, you should be a resident of the city of Portland if you submit feedback, but I'm not one to say who is or isn't a resident of the city of Portland.
I can't check that stuff.
And I'm not saying that you should unduly weigh in the public process, because that would be wrong. And Chris Smith is not telling you to. But if you consider yourself to be a resident of the city of Portland, you should talk to the people there and tell them that you support this whole walking through, bike through, drive through initiative. They should just call it a through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just do that now.
Yeah. So it's not any, you know, it's not modist. It's everything.
So I'm gonna go to the through.
I'm gonna go to the through and get a milkshake.
Yes.
Exactly. So, with that, good time to wrap up the show, yeah?
I suppose so.
All right. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
And thanks to Ryan Jalian for our theme music.
Kurt Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to sustaining donors Logan Smith, Johnny K, Shadowfoot,
Katharina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lean, Richard Wazensky, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt,
Zoe Campagna, Dave Knows, Chris Smith,
Christy Kaster, Caleb Jenkinson, J.P. Cooley,
Peanut Butter Jar Matt, Patrick R. Chain, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson,
Drew the Welder, Anna, Krista,
John Wasserman, Andre Johnson, King of Division,
Josh Zissen, Richard G., Guthrie Straw,
Brandon Shelby, Campsite,
Aaron Green. Oh, Mac Nurse David, Catherine Minchin,
Nathan Bolton, Chris Rossin, Murray Close, Michael Flournoy,
Jeremy Kitchen, David Belays. Is it Belays? I still need to know how to say that. Tim Coleman.
Todd Tillinger, Harry Hubel,
Ed Whitman, E.J. Finneran,
and Paul Culbertson,
if that's really your name. Now, and all of our former donors who helped us get this far. Now, brush your teeth.
And go to bed.